As a Partridge on the Mountains, Chapter 68. The town of Adullam is located in the land of Israel, only a few hours' walking distance from Gath, one of the five cities of the Philistines. Not too far from this town of Adullam, there is a den or a cave in the mountains called the Cave of Adullam. David flees to this cave. See him sitting there as a hunted outcast. Grief-stricken, he shakes his head. Oh, why? Why is all this happening to me? Suddenly, he is startled as a few persons enter the cave. Are they his friends or enemies? He soon discovers that they are his own brothers and his dear aged father and mother. They too are no longer safe due to the anger and malice of Saul. Because Saul is not able to capture David, his anger is turned against David's family. However, many more people come fleeing to David. Do you still remember what Samuel had said when he warned the people at the time they demanded a king? He had told them that a king would take their sons and daughters, yes, even their land and their vineyards. At that time, they did not believe Samuel. They thought everything would be well, but Samuel's words were fulfilled. Their possessions were taken from them, and it is not so pleasant. Saul, who had begun very humbly, now has a cruel, bad temper. If he desired to give a friend a present, he would take all the belongings of one of the Israelites and give them to his friend. But that surely was not honest, was it? No, that is true. But Saul did not care about honesty. Many of the poor Israelites who had become poverty-stricken fled to David, and soon David had a troop of 400 men with him. He became their captain and general. Now he is no longer alone and can defend himself if necessary. Still, it is difficult to feed so many people. Where shall he get food for all of them? Besides, in time of danger, it is easier to hide or flee when alone than when in great numbers. David felt especially sorry for his old father and mother. They cannot follow him through all his wanderings. They surely will die from fatigue. If only he knew of a safe place to have them stay. Suddenly he thought, "Yes, I know. I will bring them there. They will be safe in that place." So one day he and his men left the cave of Adullam and took a journey toward Moab. There he asked the king, "May my father and mother remain in your land?" Why does he bring his parents to Moab? Because Ruth, the Moabitess, although dead many, many years, was the grandmother of Jesse, David's father. Probably the Moabites still remember Ruth, and for this reason he brings his old parents to Moab. It was as David had thought. The king gave his approval. David also remained there a few days. He may have remained in Moab indefinitely, but the Lord, through a prophet, commanded him to return to Israel. A prophet is among the 400 men, whose name is Gad. This Gad commands him in the name of the Lord to leave Moab. David obeys this command and returns to the land of Judah and to all the dangers and troubles. However, at this moment, he believes that the Lord is able to protect him. David and his men come to a wood or forest, which is called Hereth, and there they encamped for the present time. Saul, the king of Israel, while sitting in the shadow of a few trees, said, "Is there no one who has sympathy with me?" His servants and friends stand around him. No one dares speak a word. All keep silent. "Yes, I well know," he says sorrowfully, "you all think a great deal of David. You secretly hope I never can catch David. But will David, the son of Jesse, give you fields and vineyards as I have done? Will he give you honorable positions? Even my own son, Jonathan, has made a covenant with this rebellious person. My own son helps the son of Jesse. Is there no one among you who has compassion with me? Who will help me?" In silence, they all hear his words, but no one answers him. Suddenly, a voice rings out, "King, you can depend upon me. I will help you as much as I can. Listen, I will tell you something. Not too long ago, I was in Nob by Ahimelech the high priest. David also came there. Ahimelech helped him by giving him food and the sword of Goliath. Yes, the high priest even called upon the name of the Lord for him. It is Doeg, the Edomite, who thus spoke to the king. He was one of Saul's leading shepherds. His voice was flattering, as he thought, probably, I will receive a vineyard or fields as a reward for telling the king this news." Saul's face becomes red with rage when he hears this. "What?" his voice rings out threateningly. "Is Ahimelech helping this rebel too? He will know of this." All kinds of revengeful thoughts go through his mind. "Go and fetch him at once," was his command. In a short time, Ahimelech, the high priest, with nearly his entire family, stands before the angry king. The king looks at him very sternly and threateningly. "Ahimelech, I must speak to you earnestly." "What is it, my lord and king? Here am I," is his answer. Ahimelech looks at Saul, and with an honest and upright look. The king continues violently, "Ahimelech, why did you help the son of Jesse? You gave him bread and water. Yes, you also have asked the Lord to keep him. He has opposed me. He is a rebel." Ahimelech looks at the king with great astonishment. "Is David a rebel?" he asks unbelievingly. "David, your son-in-law, is a faithful and honest man. I cannot believe it. Even if what you say is true, I cannot do anything about it, for I knew nothing of his rebelling against you. You must not accuse me of things which are not true, king." But Saul becomes so excited, and hatred fills his heart to such a degree that he does not listen to what Ahimelech says. His face is altogether distorted with anger as he says, "Ahimelech, you must die for this. Not only you, but all the house of your fathers must die. You knew that David fled from me." Saul's bodyguards stand behind him. They always are with the king to protect him. Angrily and sternly rings the command, "I order you to kill all these priests, because they knew that David fled. They have known that David is a rebel." No one stirs. It remains breathlessly quiet. The bodyguards of Saul refuse to kill the priests. They refuse to fulfill this insane command. Saul is furious when he notices this. His eyes flame with rage. Will none of his guards do it? Well and good. He does not need them. He turns to Doeg and commands him to do it. And Doeg obeys at once. Why not? It matters very little. They only are priests of the Lord. Doeg does not care about that. Who knows? Maybe he will receive a rich reward for this from Saul. What a terrible, terrible thing now takes place. Ahimelech and all the 85 priests who are with him are cold-bloodedly murdered by this one Edomite. Doeg's sword drips with blood. Still, Doeg is not finished. He travels to Nob, and there the wretch kills all the women and children. The inhabitants of the city are completely wiped out by death. Only one priest escapes. He is Abiathar, who flees to David and tells him all that has happened. David frightens terribly when he hears this. Oh, he cries, if only I had spoken the truth. The high priest could have hidden me from Doeg. I was afraid that he would tell everything. I have been the cause, and also am guilty of this terrible murder. Comfortingly, he says to the deep sorrowing Abiathar, Abiathar, listen to me. You remain with me. I will protect you as well as I can. God shall keep you and me. Children, it has been fulfilled here what the prophet once said to Eli, your entire family shall die. There shall not be an old man in thine house forever. All these priests who were killed were descendants of Eli. Still, Saul is not guiltless because of this. No, no. Saul is and remains the cruel, heartless murderer of all these innocent priests. He has given the command for them to be killed. O Saul, you shall suffer for this. One day the punishment of the Lord shall come upon you because of the innocent blood of the priests which has been shed must be accounted for. Harvest time is always a pleasant time for the farmers. At that season, they receive their wages for all their hard work. The farmers rejoice when the golden grain is mown down and brought into the barns. So it was with the inhabitants of Keilah. This city is situated a little to the south of the cave of Adullam. The men have mown the grain and gathered it into the barns. Shortly, and they will begin to thresh this grain, and again, and they will have bread for their wives and children. But unexpectedly, the army of the Philistines comes upon them. The inhabitants of Keilah try to defend themselves, but to no avail. They are defeated, and the Philistines plunder all their grain. They gnash their teeth with rage, and the inhabitants of Keilah look upon all this with sorrow. Oh, if only they could stop them, but the Philistines are too strong for them. The people of Keilah have done everything in their power to hinder them. They need help, but they cannot expect it. Suddenly, a few hundred soldiers come marching by, and they fall upon the Philistine robbers. A violent battle rages, which lasts only a short time. The Philistines are startled with this fierce and unexpected attack. They are confused and begin to flee. In their haste, they must leave behind all they have robbed. The inhabitants of Kiala are happy and wonder from where this help has come. David, who was in the neighborhood with his men, heard that Kiala was in distress. A messenger had told him. He hesitated for a moment. What shall he do? Help? It is dangerous because he must be careful of Saul. He really doesn't know what to do. Even his men do not wish to go. They fear that Saul will come upon them unexpectedly while they are fighting with the Philistines. But David cannot endure the thought that the Philistines can rob and plunder unhindered. In his inward struggle, he goes to the Lord for advice. Lord, must I attack the Philistines? He prays. And the Lord answers him, yes, go up. But will I also gain the victory? David asks further. Yes, you will gain the victory, is God's reply. So David and his men march quickly to help Keilah in their great need. He now has an army of 600 men. That is the reason the inhabitants of Keilah received help, and the enemy had to flee and leave everything behind. David and his men remain in Keilah. Soon the Israelites hear of this new heroic act of David. Saul also hears about it. But instead of being glad, Saul is angry. The old jealousy comes to the fore. Nice, he thinks. Now I have him. I will surround Keilah so he cannot escape from me. He will be my prisoner. How false, isn't it? Instead of Saul being thankful, he wishes to kill David. David hears that Saul and his army are approaching. He again asks the Lord for advice. Is it true, Lord? Is Saul really coming to Keilah? And will the inhabitants of Keilah deliver me into his hands? The Lord gives him this answer. Yes, David, Saul is coming, and the people of Keilah will not help you, but they will deliver you into his hands. Such unthankfulness from this people, isn't it? David had delivered them from the Philistines, and still they would have taken him prisoner and surrendered him to Saul. When David receives this answer, he and his army immediately leave Keilah and flee too? Yes. Where can he flee? He isn't safe anywhere. Poor David. He flees to the wilderness of Ziph, which is close by. It is desolate there and full of mountains and cliffs. When Saul hears that David has left the city of Keilah, he returns to his home at Gibeah. Fear not, David. My father will not kill you. The Lord will protect you. You will become king, and I will be second unto you. Once again, the two faithful friends, David and Jonathan, meet together. David is discouraged and sad, but his friend Jonathan encourages and comforts him. When Jonathan had heard that David was in the wilderness of Ziph, he immediately went to seek him. Noble Jonathan! He is well satisfied that David should become king and not he. That is real friendship. Is there mutual friendship among you two? Or are you often envious and jealous of one another? If you are, it is not real friendship. Jonathan is not envious or jealous of David. He is wholeheartedly willing to grant the kingdom to David. They both make another covenant. Jonathan reminds David of the faithfulness of God, who will never permit David to be wretchedly overcome. We read in the Bible that Jonathan strengthened his hand in God. Jonathan returns. In the meantime, new dangers are threatening David. The Ziphites, the inhabitants of the city of Ziph, notice that David is in the neighborhood, and they quickly go to Saul and tell him this news. "King," they say, "David is near our country. If you come immediately, we will see to it that you can take David a prisoner and kill him." Saul is happy when he hears this. "You are at least willing to help me," he says praisingly. "The Lord bless you for that." "No, Saul, you need not call upon the name of the Lord, because you want to commit a murder. You want to murder David, your son-in-law." What the Ziphites did is called treachery. It is true, David had many friends, but he also had many enemies. We can see it in this case. The Ziphites return, determined that David will not escape from them. Quickly, Saul gathers his army and goes to Ziph. The Ziphites lead the way, for David has journeyed still further into the wilderness. He is now close to the place called Maon. Saul comes close to him, dangerously close. David hastens to make his escape, but already it is too late. He is surrounded by the army of Saul. Now he is lost. He can go nowhere. The only thing he can do is pray to God for deliverance. Suddenly, a messenger approaches King Saul, and he entreats the king. "King, help! The Philistines have invaded the land." Saul stamps his feet. Oh, what a pity! He does not realize that this is the Lord's guiding hand delivering his servant David. For a moment, Saul halts between two thoughts. What must he do? He issues the command, "Gather together." First, he will overcome the Philistines. Later, he will catch David. Another opportunity will come in the future. He marches away. David is free. It has been a narrow escape, but God watched over him and delivered him from death. Thankfully, David lifts his eyes toward heaven.